Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 21, and the Steelers are coming off a bad defeat at the hands of the Philadelphia Eagles. It's Chiefs week as they get ready for a nationally televised game Sunday night against Kansas City, 8:30 at Heinz Field. And Dave, a banged-up team taking on a team that has some of the same characteristics of the team that just beat the Steelers. It should be an interesting test for the Steelers Sunday night.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a Chiefs team that, even though the Steelers played them last year without Ben Roethlisberger, you know, probably a game they could have, should have won. Alex Smith was Alex Smith in that game, but a couple turnovers aside, and I think that was Alejandro Villanueva's first career start too at left tackle, because the week before is when Kelvin Beachum had went down injured with his knee injury there. So, you know, look, I mean, they're going to see a lot of what they saw on Sunday against the Eagles. I mean, obviously the similarities in the coaching staffs, having lineage between the two organizations. But on the flip side, you know, there's some positive things to look forward to as well too. Remember last year and previous years, really, I think James Harrison has really had his way with Eric Fisher over there on that side. And boy, I think I mentioned on your radio show yesterday, they got to get, if there's one person they got to get on the field more, in my opinion, it's 38-year-old James Harrison.
Yeah, Dave, no doubt. I mean, look, you look at this defense, the outside linebacker position, and basically Anthony Ciccolo and Arthur Motes, they're Jags. They're just a guy type players. They're guys who are good role players on a 53-man roster, good special teams players. If they start a game or two here or there because of injury, okay, you're fine. But they're not elite level pass rushers, and they're never going to be elite level pass rushers. Jarvis Jones, let's get into this conversation a little bit later about, you know, who was the better pick or who was the worst pick, Jarvis Jones or Ziggy Hood. They're both guys who've played for the Steelers. They're going to have plenty of starts in their career, but they never lived up to expectations. They'll be in the league. Jarvis Jones will be in the league next year. I don't know if he'll be in the league with the Steelers, but, you know, to expect things differently, to happen differently now, is probably unrealistic. I mean, he's played, you know, this long. He's got 5 career sacks. He's not going to finish this season with 8 or 9 sacks. It just is what it is. So, yeah, you got to get James Harrison on the field more. You hope Bud Dupree comes back. And more than anything, Keith Butler's just going to have to start dialing it up. I mean, he's going to have the exotics, the fire X. He's going to have to find ways to get pressure, because they're not going to win the one-on-one battles with those guys.
Yeah, I think they I think they rushed 5 in that game, a total of, hold on here, let me count them up here, 1, 2, 3, I think 4 times they rushed 5 in there.
That's it in the game, 4 times.
Yeah, now obviously we on these quick screens and all like that, we don't even count pass rush on that, because, I mean, the ball's out so quick, you know. So, you know, we don't even track rushers on those kind of quick passes. But on all other dropbacks, I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4 times they rushed 5 and blitzed 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Looks like 9 times they blitz. Now, you can blitz and not send 5 guys off.
So, Dave, that's interesting, because they were actually talking about it this week. The Steelers, in terms of how they categorize things, they only count a blitz as sending more than 4 guys. So if they send Willie Gay and 3 other guys, they don't look at it as a blitz. We do, because it's not the standard rushers, but they don't. So I'm interested to hear what the numbers were on that. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, we break it down on guys that we don't, you know, people that you wouldn't expect to come.
Right, middle backers and defensive backs.
Right, middle backers and defensive backs. When those guys come, we consider it a blitz. So,
yeah. So what were the numbers on that?
I think we had 9 blitzes in total. Let's see, you had one right off the bat on the second offensive, you know, on the first drop back even. When 94 and 95 came, you had another one come a couple plays later. When 95 came, they only rushed 4 on that play. You know, some of these times Jarvis will be lined up in the middle, and that's one time, you know, kind of off the ball a little bit. That's when you don't necessarily think that they're coming. But Timmons and Jarvis on that first one, it looks like Alex has Jarvis listed on the second one. Jarvis listed on the third one, and then 55, 54, which would be
Moats and Fort.
Moats and Fort, 92 and 23, which obviously would be Harrison and Mitchell, and then later on in the game, 98, which would be Vince Williams, and then very late 22, which would be William Gay. So
yeah, he got picked up.
And he got picked up on that play. So not a lot of five-man rush. Let's just put it to you that way. You know, not a lot at all.
And we both agree they got to change that, right?
They've got to if they're
going to do something differently.
Yeah, they got to do something different with some exotics or something. I don't know. I mean, you know, obviously down and distance plays a big part of this, and we don't track run blitzes, you know, either. So, you know, they might be blitzing a little bit more than actually what we're calculating here. They just might be, you know, better described as run blitzes. But I mean, it's quite obviously, you know, David, they're not getting home. I think you had Chickalo had a pressure in this game against the Eagles, and that was uncontested off the left side. And then I think you had James Harrison had a couple of pressures slash hits. What else was there? I mean, that was it, right?
Nothing. Yeah, they had three. You know, they had one. They had 3 quarterback hits in the game. They had 1 pass defense by Artie Burns and 3 quarterback hits, no sacks.
Yeah, so I mean, if you let a quarterback sit back there unpressured, I don't care. I mean, if you have 7 in coverage, eventually somebody's going to work themselves open. If you know, if you're giving the quarterback 3 to 3.4 seconds to get rid of the football, and although, you know, Wentz did a good job a lot of times of getting that football. I mean, just look at the distance of passes that he threw in the game. You know, there were, and we already talked about this. I mean, how many of those completed passes were 8 yards or less? We knew coming into the game that he was going to have these kind of passes. But what gets you is when he completes the early one to Green Beckham on 3rd and what was it? 12?
12, 3rd, 12, right in front of Cockrell. That was a really good throw, good play design. You know, a deep dig route.
Right, and against quarters coverage, you know, right up, you know, look, I mean, sometimes you got to tip your hat to the other team, but no pressure on the quarterback certainly helped that, you know, because he's got to give the receiver time to get down the field to develop the route. And if you're getting him off his mark there, then that never happens. And of course, quarters, you're dropping a guy, each guy back in a quarter field of the coverage, and it's in, you're playing over top. Yeah, you can dig Cockrell a little bit on the play, but if you get pressure, that, you know, he probably has to dump that up underneath somehow or throw short of the chain. So, I mean, it's been a constant theme so far this year, and you're going to play a guy in Alex Smith who notoriously is bad at throwing the football past 15 yards down the field and will gladly take the dump off. So we're going to see a lot of these, you know, until the Steelers show they can stop it, we'll see a lot of these misdirection screens to the running backs out of the backfield.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, it's just they're going to have to do a better job in so many facets.
Now look, it's easy for us to talk about how they need to and how they, you know, should do this. they just don't they don't have the personnel outside of James Harrison to get after the passer as far as edge guys goes. So, you know, Hayward are going to have to do a better job.
All true, and Dave, that's you know, look, this is Tuitt and Hayward, absolutely, and we've probably, you know, I don't want to say they've been terrible. I mean, but we probably haven't paid enough attention, and this gets into, you know, the press conference, and I want to get there, but let's start with the injury report because it's extensive.
Absolutely, it is. You know, Ryan Shazier, Ramon Foster, and who was the other one? Eli Rogers, all very questionable or highly questionable, according to Mike Tomlin. So, it doesn't look good for any of those three guys to play. And, you know, you not having Shazier will obviously be big, especially when you talk about kind of trying to defend a great tight end in Kelsey. Eli Rogers, not, you know, look, I mean, say what you will about Eli Rogers. Yes, he good out of the slot. They're going to miss his snaps, but it's not a huge, huge deal breaker not having him. Ramon Foster not having him. I don't know what you thought about B.J. Finney, David, but maybe it's because he was the freshest guy in there. But overall, I thought he represented himself fairly well, replacing Foster the other on Sunday. And now it looks like he's going to be in line to make his first career start Sunday night against the Kansas City Chiefs. Those three guys I wouldn't expect them to go. Now the other guys that'll probably be, you know, that are questionable, of course, are Robert Golden. I guess Sean Davis now with that back. That was kind of a new revelation from Tomlin on Sunday, being as how he didn't mention him during the press conference. I guess the positive thing, Lawrence Timmons, with that gash in his shin that he had, and boy, didn't that shoe turn red mighty quick during that game against the Eagles after he got kind of spiked there.
He got a puncture wound,
yeah.
And obviously, for, you know, the deal was they couldn't fix it, they couldn't stitch it or close it or clean it out and everything at the stadium. And that's why he had to go to the hospital and he got back right as the game ended. So, you know, it sounds like obviously he didn't do a lot of muscular damage, which is the obviously the good news.
Yeah.
Excuse me. He should be able to go.
Yeah. Sounds like he'll be able to go. And of course, we'll just keep our fingers crossed with Cody Wallace and Roosevelt Nix. How great would it be for them to have Nix back on the same week they get Le'Veon Bell back?
And it'd be good to have any of those guys back. I mean, you know, Cody and Nix, because, I mean, I guess we're going to assume Finney's going to get the start because it's been so long since Cody Wallace played. You'd rather have Cody Wallace in there, I'm sure, right?
I don't know. Cody's a better center than he is guard, that's for sure. And that, what are we saying when we say that? Now, with that said, like I said, look, I mean, you go back to the preseason, I don't remember B.J. Finney taking many, if any, snaps during the preseason at left guard. But with that said, he did represent himself well, I thought, against the Eagles after replacing Foster. And because of that, I think he deserves to get the start, especially when you have a guy like Cody Wallace coming off of injury, and hopefully Cody can dress as your backup center then and be your backup interior guy. But to be quite honest with you, I'd much rather give Finney the start here than be able to go to the bullpen, if you will, with a guy like Cody Wallace.
I don't think there's any question that if Foster doesn't go, that Finney will get the start, just because of practice time and everything else that's happened over the past month with Cody Wallace. So I think it will go that way. So
and Mike Tomlin, hey, you know, say, you know, maybe it just trying to pump the young guy up, but he was asked how B.J. Finney played on Sunday. He said he thought he was solid. So, you know, read into that what you will.
Right. Okay, so my guess is Foster doesn't play. Rodgers is out. Shazier's not going to play. I'll be perplexed if Robert Golden plays. And the reason I say this is because he was ruled out of that game immediately. It wasn't like, well, you know, we'll see if he can return. He's questionable to return or whatever. He was 10 plays in. He was ruled out. And to me, that means you've got a hamstring tear. I mean, you know, it's not like, well, it's a little tight or it's a little, you know, it doesn't feel great. I mean, you get ruled out like that, you think it's something significant. But he seems to say that it's just tweaked. That's what the report was out of the locker room this morning. And he's hoping to play, We'll see if he practices today. I think, you know, if he doesn't go today and tomorrow, he's not going to play. So he's the guy, I guess, that is on the border for me. So the Steelers are going to be shorthanded, and that's obviously going to create big question marks in that secondary, depending on he and Sean Davis.
Boy, we talked is your voice okay today, David?
You know, the funny thing is, I don't even know what this is from. I wasn't screaming at anybody last night.
I hear you. If you never leave the house, like me, you just don't talk to people. You can save your voice, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to have to get a little hot tea here. David, by the way, you know, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates are currently at near or at all-time lows, and if you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxnand from First Advantage Mortgage. A lifelong Steeler fan, a Pittsburgh native, Craig is a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out Terrible Podcast listeners. Call Craig Oxnand today at 866-772-0471. That's 866-772-0471, or apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Okay, Dave, there was a lot to get to in the press conference. I thought this was one of the more loquacious press conferences that Mike Tomlin's had. I thought there were a lot of interesting topics discussed. So let's hit that. Where do you want to start?
I think I asked about Shamarco Thomas and the possibility of him seeing time. You know, we talked about that the other day in kind of the wrap-up Monday podcast there. And, you know, with Robert Golden sounding kind of 50-50 and Sean Davis with that back, you know, there might be an opportunity for him. And, you know, I think Mike Tomlin left the door open, so to speak.
Yeah, you know, I'd bet all your money, Dave, that both Shamarco Thomas and Justin Gilbert see snaps defensively in this game.
Oh, you'd bet all my money.
Yeah, I would bet all your money.
Thanks a lot. I think Justin Gilbert will. I think it's time for him. I'm not so convinced. You know, I think obviously the rest depends on if Robert Golden doesn't play. Well, then obviously.
And I'm assuming he's not going to play.
Obviously, that really increases the chances for a guy like Shamarco Thomas. Let me tell you, if Shamarco Thomas can't get on the field in this game, when can he get on the field, right?
Yeah, and, you know, look, we've seen, you know, we hear that he's making progress and whatever. I mean, you know, he'll be another guy. Will he be back next year? Will he be back under a Robert Golden type of contract next year? Well, this is going to be his chance. I mean, this is what he's been waiting for since start of last year to get this opportunity. So he better make the best of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would think it would come in some sort of quarters, you know, dime type personnel grouping there. Sean Davis, if Golden doesn't play, then we would expect Davis to, of course, fill Golden's role there. And now the thing is can you get a guy like Gilbert on the field in any situation? You know, being as I mean, you're still going to have all your corners, right? I mean,
yeah, everybody's healthy. It seems.
So you know, even though Mike Tomlin kind of left the door open for Justin Gilbert and how he's, you know, been preparing well, and how what did he say he's passed the. What did he call that stage with Justin Gilbert?
Yeah, he said he's passed the getting familiar with the defense type of stage. He knows all the terminology. He's got the playbook basically, and now he's got to act on it.
Yeah, here's what he said. He's doing nice things for us in practice, not only in special teams, but getting up to snuff on defense. And he's past the learning what to do stage now in both phases, and now he's moving on to the critical element of gaining enough detail to be successful where we're comfortable and he's comfortable. I like the progress that he's made thus far, though. You know, we'll see. I would bet more. I like the chances of Shamarco seeing the field more than I do Justin Gilbert, but who knows? Maybe you can get Justin Gilbert in on you know, some of those quarters coverages or something along those lines. But I wouldn't bet my money on it.
you don't think you'll see Gilbert?
No, I'm just saying his chances, in my opinion, of seeing the field would be lesser than a guy like Shamarco Thomas.
Yeah, I think that's right. Look, if you have two safeties hurt, you're going to get to Shamarco Thomas out of necessity. So it'll be interesting how it all plays out. Again, Sean Davis this morning in the locker room said he's not sure if he's going to practice today. So I'm guessing that means no. I'm guessing Golden's going to be no. And that means, you know, the follow-up, Dave, was I asked Mike if he expected to make any roster moves as he sits today, which was yesterday. And he said no, but stay tuned.
Yeah, and they did sign Jacob Hagan back to the practice squad on, what is today, on Tuesday. Boy, they've been bouncing him and Brandon Brown Dukes on and off the practice squad since the season started. So signing Hagan back to the practice squad means they need an extra body at safety. So one would think that today Sean Davis and Robert Golden will not go. Or one of those guys be extremely limited if they do go. And you know how Tomlin is with these rookies, though. If they don't practice for those first 2 days of the week, it's kind of hard. He certainly don't like to dress them on Sundays. But you know, I don't know. Let me ask you this: if Sean Davis was able to be limited on not go on Wednesday, be limited on Thursday, and practice at least limited on Friday, do you play him?
No.
Limited?
No, he's got to have a full – he's got to practice full on Friday for him to play.
Okay. I would agree with you with Tomlin's history, but, you know, we'll definitely see here. They need to do something different with these guys, and do you really even want to go into these games with guys not 100%? You know,
right. I think that's it. Yes.
You know, on top of it. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens with Shamarco. I would like to see him down in the box to get Timmons off the field. I don't think you want to get in a situation here where you're forced to play nickel a lot, right?
Well, you're going to be playing nickel a lot, I would think.
Well, if that's the case, you're going to be leaving Timmons on the field, right?
Yeah. I mean, you're talking nickel versus dime, or?
Yeah, nickel versus dime quarters.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. I mean, no, you'd rather play dime, yes.
Right, so, I mean, you don't – we'll see how it goes. You definitely don't want to get – I mean, look, they did it in – excuse me, they did it a lot in the opener, right? Played a lot of nickel, so, no, we'll see.
Okay, Gilbert is a kick returner. Again, it sounds like maybe he'll get a chance to do that.
I'd do that yesterday.
I would have done it week one. I mean, I made this clear. It's just you're not getting anything from Toussaint. Coach hasn't shown anything. And Gilbert has a history of doing it. I don't know. You know, he was willing to put Jacoby Jones in there, you know, the minute he signed him. I don't get it. It's not that complicated.
I would agree. run north. Catch the ball and avoid the bad blocks ahead of you, and get us 25 yards at minimum. And right now, Toussaint and Coates are averaging what, 19? I wrote it up yesterday. I think something like 19 yards a return. You're better off.
That's not good. That's not good enough.
You're better off taking a knee if it's in the end zone. Don't you know? If one of those two guys are back there, I tell them if you catch that ball in the end zone, just kneel it down. And you know, we'll see what happens with Gilbert. And you know, the thing is, now we see some teams trying to kick this football and have it come down right at about the goal line or at the one. So the kick returner has to make a decision. How does that whole concussion thing working out, making the game safer now by moving the touchback out to the 25-yard line? Because you knew it was coming. Teams are just going to try to find a way to not give up an extra 5 yards. And it's going to be interesting to count these concussion numbers on kickoffs after the season's over, right?
Yeah. You know, I asked Mike specifically about that as well, about – you know, trying to kick it high and short. And he said, we haven't done it yet. We certainly spent a lot of time. Again, this is a question I thought he would completely blow off. And he gave a very expansive answer as to what they were thinking and something that, you know, they will consider it. They haven't decided not to use that tactic yet, but it has been used against him, and it's been used against him effectively.
What did you think about Mike's comments about tackling and guarding against the running back screens?
Yeah, well, again, you know, I had a lot of questions lined up for Mike, and I thought he was going to blow this off. And specifically, for those who didn't hear it, it was the question I asked a question about on the play where Darren Sproles went for the 73-yard touchdown. It's a situation where Shazier got caught in no man's land. He's got the quarterback coming out of the pocket free, so he can obviously run. And he's got Sproles a yard behind him, and Sproles can get behind him. So he's got to make a decision. And then later in the play, you got Sean Davis approaching Sproles at the sideline. And it's incredibly difficult. We've seen Martavis Bryant. We've seen Sammy Coates. We've seen Antonio Brown. You know, obviously, most of the time, the runner, if it's just a one-on-one defender there, you want to cut inside because then you have the whole field. Yes, you may bring other tacklers into play, but, you know, you lose that being forced out of bounds option. And so, they are really hard plays. And I asked Mike, do you coach them up in the film room after the game and say, look, this is what you got to do there? And he said, we need to coach them up before the play happens. It's not after the play. They have to know. And he blamed both players. He criticized them both. He said, when you're in coverage, you stay in coverage. So Shazier should have stayed with the runner there. He said, that is the guys rushing the passer. That's their job to keep contained on the quarterback. Okay, so that's Shazier made a bad decision. And then he said, you know, when you're there, you got to keep the guy on the sideline. That's your 12th defender. So you got to keep him there. And so he criticized Sean Davis for letting Sproles cut inside on him. So again, a much more expansive and critiquing both players negatively on that play.
You know, the All-22 shows on that as well, too, now, don't you? You know, the Steelers are in cover three, and for some reason, Ross Cockrell decides to go into the middle of the field with a tight end, David. And if he doesn't do that, sure, I guarantee you, and it'd be, I don't know if you're going to have a chance to talk to any players maybe this week in a locker room, David. And, of course, I wouldn't expect Shazier to throw anybody up underneath the bus here. But I'm willing to bet you Shazier thought he had somebody behind him, i.e. in the form of Cockrell as well. Because if Cockrell stays on his third of the field and doesn't – I realize, and look, that tight end was open in the middle of the field. And he's probably thinking, man, I got to go shut this down. But if you go watch the All-22 on this, David – you will see Cockrell leave his third and run into the middle of the field. And when he does that, that obviously leaves up over the top of Shazier wide open. Now, does Wentz still complete that pass to Sproles over the top of Shazier? Probably. But does it go for 70 whatever yards for a touchdown? No. It doesn't. Go back and watch that, Dave, and tell me and let me know what you think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So another question I asked was about keeping guys on the field. And look, this was not I didn't want this to be a confrontational thing or anything that, you know, why'd you do this type of thing. Is that, you know, different schools of thoughts on leaving players in late. And if you listen to Tunson Wolf yesterday, you heard Wolf say, you know, you're a leader, you want to stay out there, you know, you're all in it together, you don't want to leave the field. And, you know, he thought it was the right decision. You know, plenty of people really criticized Mike for taking a risk. I did, I think Dave did as well, for taking an unnecessary risk in a game where the result was clearly decided. And we got an interesting email yesterday from one of our listeners, Jeff, and Jeff allowed me to share this. So just a different perspective on supporting Mike's decision. And I appreciate Jeff writing, and it's a relatively long email. So I'm going to read most of it here, and then I'm going to counter some of the things that Jeff says as well. So he talked about leaving Ben in the game. He said he's a 24-year active duty military veteran. And so it maybe skews his topic toward the whole event, but he said, he talks about cohesion being built and, you know, talking about in sports and in, you know, in the field of being in the military. And obviously the risk associated with the two are obviously he recognizes completely different. But he said both cultures rely on proficiency, discipline, and perishable skills that are unique to each profession, often practiced by extremists who work toward elite status in their field. And he said cohesion is only built one way, through adversity. That is why training camp and football and training exercises in the military are so grueling. The shared adversity going through it together is what builds cohesion. And it takes a long time to build and maintain. and you spend your entire career doing that. He said pulling Ben during a particularly tough game is the antithesis of building or maintaining cohesion. In fact, it can irrevocably destroy the cohesion already built. Not allowing Ben to share in the adversity of the loss, painful as it was, would have been a mistake. Not to mention, how could Ben ever tell anyone to give more, to put out, to step up, to run the route better, block harder, push faster, if when they go and get tough, Ben sat down and let someone else finish? How would it be okay for him to quit on the game, but not okay for Sammy to quit on the route? Okay, so I appreciate the parallels here, and this is why I think it's important. Ben won't ever pull himself out of the game. This is why the decision has to be completely removed from the player, and it's 100% on the coach. Mike Tomlin pulls him out. And yes, is he saying Ben is more important than Ramon Foster or than Jesse James? You're damn right he is, because he is. I mean, the season can go down the tubes. It's not going to go down the tubes if Jesse James gets hurt, but it may go down the tubes if Ben's hurt. So while I agree with the principles that Jeff is talking about, this is why that's why Mike Tomlin is the coach. He goes out, he makes a decision. Is not open for discussion. Now, he obviously made a different decision, said because, you know, he's slow to admit defeat. Fair enough. 31 points down, 8 minutes to go. Probably time.
Yeah, and Jeff, 24-year active duty military veteran. First of all, thank you for that.
Thank you for your service. Yeah,
for your service. Jeff, I get where you're coming from, and I at the same time, I think you understand where we're coming from, and my original tweet even during that game was somebody handcuffed Ben to the bench, and I worded it that way because I think that was the only way that you're going to keep him off the field. We all know that Ben absolutely hates coming out of these games, and it could have been 96-3, and he's still going to want to go out there because that's the competitor in him. That's what you would expect him. But as David said, there comes a point in time where, you know, the head coach needs to make that decision for the player, in my opinion. And look, I mean, Ben's been with this team and with this offensive line long enough. Is anybody really going to question a coach,
his commitment,
his commitment? And on top of that, everybody's going to know that Mike Tomlin pulled him out of this game, and it wasn't Ben. Ben, look, I mean, I want a quarterback at a change of possession getting up and heading up off the field. Mike Tomlin always says all the time, you know, says quite often, I'd rather say woe than sick 'em, right? Well, this was a case where I think Mike Tomlin should have said whoa, and that's plain and simple there. Nobody's questioning Ben's toughness here, no, you know, none of that whatsoever. I just think, and as David, you know, put it better, there just comes a time where a coach has to take this into his own hands and say, look, wave the white flag here. And look, I mean, should it have been first drive of the first quarter? Maybe not. Let him go out there, because you never know what can happen. But there was a point about, what, 7, 8, 9 minutes left in the game where it just wasn't going to happen. He should have been, as I said, handcuffed to the bench.
Yeah. Okay. So you and I agree on that. We'd like to hear from some more of our listeners what they think. Yeah, pull Ben or keep him in there. Okay, Dave. Other things out of the press conference. Who's going to play in the slot? I think that's pretty obvious. It's going to be Marcus Wheaton first and DHB if necessary. What other topics did we hit?
Yeah, just he talked about Le'Veon Bell and how great his condition it is on a full 12-month calendar, and how he basically, in so many words, he's not going to ease Le'Veon Bell back in action this week. You're gonna see Bell, and you're gonna see a lot of him now. However, you know, Ben, I think, talked today in the locker room about how they can maybe get both running backs on the field. I think we'll see that. I think we'll see both D'Angelo and Le'Veon on the field at the same time. However, you know, well, an over-under on that's probably, what, 5 snaps we see both those guys on the field? Is that fair?
Yeah, that sounds 5 to 10. Yeah, that sounds right.
You know,
I think because short a receiver – the number is going to be slightly higher than it might have been otherwise.
But with that, I mean, you were dressing four wide receivers before Wheaton came back, right? So, I mean, the thing is, you can – it'll be interesting to see how they interchange guys like Hayward Bay and Wheaton in the slot there. Sammy, you know, go deep, Sammy. I mean, look, you don't want to knock what this kid's done, but I mean, it's either a screen or a deep post pattern, right?
He's got two routes. You know, wide receiver screen and go.
And we'd kind of like to see what I'd like to see is some of these quick slants maybe to Sammy because he has a big body. Can he do that and can he get him? Because you remember Richard Mann talking about after Sammy was drafted that, boy, this is a guy that can get you some yards at some hard yards after a catch. And you know, you remember him talking about a guy that can dig out of safety and a hard fart yard, hard fought yards. I think I just said hard fart yards. but it's just something that we haven't seen in kind of his route repertoire right now. He's very, very limited route runner still. Boy, if anybody's got to step up, it's a guy like Marcus Wheaton. And David, I don't know about you, I try to get the football in the hands of Le'Veon Bell 30 times in this game, whether it be passes or runs. Maybe 30 is a little strong. 25, at least 25 times I try to get the football in the hands of Le'Veon Bell during this game.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, I'm guessing he's going to carry it, you know, assuming the game doesn't go the way of the game last week, he's going to carry it, you know, somewhere between 17 and 22 times and probably, you know, catch 5 to 7 balls. So I'm with you in the general numbers, yeah.
And as far as defense in this thing goes, I mean, we'll talk with Adam here shortly. You want to kind of cue us up on that?
Yeah, well, we're going to get we've got our beat writer all set to go. He was not available. The reason the podcast is up late is he was not available until early afternoon as the Chiefs practice dictate the timing. But yeah, we'll get into that. Dave, just we've covered a lot of the Steelers stuff. Around the league, J.J. Watt put on the IR today. His season may be over. That's not only obviously huge news for the Texans, but that'll impact the AFC in the playoff race.
Yeah, boy, and what a guy that you just as a football fan, I hate to see this because I enjoy watching J.J. Watt play. What did you see what your buddy R.J. Bell tweeted out late last night? How
I didn't.
Something about Vegas considers J.J. Watt a point-and-a-half player, which makes him the most valuable player in the entire league. Go find that tweet from last night that R.J. put
– Most valuable defensive player.
Right, exactly. Which one, we already knew that going in, but for him to affect a point spread by 1.5 points – that's pretty big deal right there when it comes to Vegas. There's already some questions. I don't know about you, but I had questions about Brock Osweiler going into this game against the Patriots that the Texans had. Now if you take I think he's going to be an up and down season for Brock Osweiler. So when now you add into it, you take the most important piece of the Texans defense out of the equation now, man, it's going to be tough. That division's still going to be wide open, much like it was last year. And as bad as the Colts are, I still think the Colts come out of that thing with the division title, because I think Andrew Luck's going to be able to still guide that offense to maybe 9 wins, and 9 wins in that division might just be enough.
Yeah, well, not a good start. So they're gonna have to crank it up. I mean, it does really open things up. I still think they're the best team, but the Texans. But we'll see where things go. All right, Dave, we hit enough. We'll get into the Chiefs.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
Welcome back to the second part of the Terrible Podcast here on Wednesday, and pleased to be joined now, as we are every week, by one of the opposing team's beat writers. And of course, the Steelers will be hosting the Kansas City Chiefs at 8:30 at Heinz Field in a nationally televised game. Even though these two teams aren't in the same division, it feels like they play every year. And if you remember last year, we had Adam Teicher on with us, covers the Chiefs for ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter at Adam Teicher, TEICHER, and you can find his Facebook page at KC Chiefs ESPN. Adam, thanks very much for being back with us again.
Absolutely.
Adam, the start to the season here, just tell us kind of Andy Reid now settled in as the coach of the Chiefs. This is a team that started poorly last year and then starting with the Steeler game, got on a great roll, ended up being a playoff team. Did they look at was the overall feeling coming out of last season that it was a successful season? And then kind of the offseason, how do you view what they did in the offseason?
Yeah, they felt like last season was a success, particularly the way it started. You know, they started 1-5 and were able to win their final 10 games. And, you know, another thing that has been hanging over this franchise for a long time is they just couldn't win in the postseason until last year. You know, they'd gone, I think it was 8 straight games they'd lost in the playoffs, been 22 years since they'd won a playoff game. So, you know, it was a big deal to get that monkey off their back last year when they beat Houston in the right. playoffs. So, I think they did view it as being successful. And, you know, you can look at, you talk about the offseason, you can look at the moves the Chiefs made, and they obviously felt like they were pretty close to being a championship team because they opted more for continuity than really adding a whole lot. I mean, this team is remarkably similar on the roster to what it was last season. So, they made the priority retaining a lot of the guys who were going to be free agents. So that's kind of what the Chiefs thought about their team heading into the offseason.
Okay, and so we come in here, and obviously with every team, it starts with the quarterback, and Alex Smith is a guy that he's a polarizing guy for a lot of people who watch football because he gets results, but it's not always pretty. Doesn't throw the ball down the field much. He is, you know, people love using, you know, he's the definition in many people's minds of the word game manager. People love to rank QBs, Adam. When you think of Alex Smith, is he in the top half of QBs in your mind in the league?
That's a hard one to answer. You know, he's certainly in that area if he's not in there. The one thing about Alex Smith is, generally speaking, you know what you're going to get every week. I mean, his performance doesn't change much from week to week. You know, it's something the coaches can count on. You know, the season opener against San Diego, the Chiefs got down 21 points in the third quarter. And, you know, he really caught fire and lifted the Chiefs to a victory. You know, they ended up winning in overtime. And, you know, that's the first game they've won with Alex Smith with a late touchdown. You know, they hadn't won, every time they'd been in a late game situation where they'd needed a touchdown, either win or send it to overtime or whatever, they weren't able to get it done. So, it was a big deal for them to get that done, and, you know, first time with Smith. But, you know, it's been a little bit of a struggle for him ever since, particularly 2 weeks ago down in Houston. It was a pretty ugly game for the Chiefs and for Smith. He may be a little bit better last week against the Jets, but right now their offense is, you know, they got 5 touchdowns this season on offense, which is not very good when you think about it for 3 games, but 4 of those touchdowns came in about a 23-minute span against the Chargers. So the Chiefs have played a ton, including the last 2 weeks, and have 1 touchdown outside of that one period I'm talking about against the Chargers. So they've got to get this figured out. They've got to score some more points, and certainly Smith figures prominently in that.
Adam, the Steelers come into this game defensively struggling to get after the quarterback, only have 1 sack, if you want to call it even that. And the Chiefs right now, I think Alex Smith's been sacked something like 9 times. Something's probably got to give somewhere in the middle here. What have been the protection issues so far, keeping Alex Smith off the ground?
Well, part of it is, the Chiefs have started 3 different offensive line combinations in their 3 games because of injuries. And I have a sense it'll be 4-for-4 this week against the Steelers. I think they're going to get 1 guy back who's been missing. So, you know, they just haven't had any continuity there during the regular season. Part of it is that Smith takes a lot of sacks. I mean, he generally does. I mean, he holds on to the ball maybe more than the typical quarterback. So he's going to go down more than your average quarterback. So, you know, it's a combination of things. You know, they ran into some defensive fronts that they found pretty difficult to protect against, in particular Houston a couple weeks ago, but to a lesser extent against the Jets last week. And, you know, it's been a little bit of a matchup problem for the Chiefs. So, you know, it's a little bit of a lot of things, really.
One of the long-time knocks on Alex Smith is the ability to throw the deep ball, and by that I mean more than 15 yards past the line of scrimmage. And he comes into this game, I believe, 5 of 18 on those kind of passes this year. And I think the thing that sticks out is his 5 completions, 3 of them have gone to Jeremy Maclin, and 2 have gone to running back Spencer Ware on some fairly deep balls. And I think both those, of course, they didn't score, but they were first downs, obviously. Obviously, I noticed that Travis Kelce hasn't been targeted a lot deep. Are we going to start seeing this? Because if memory serves me, they had success doing this last time around against the Steelers down the middle of the field.
Yeah, you know, it could be something. I know they want to get more big plays because it's been a problem for them. That's been one of the problems. You know, last week against the Jets, they only had one pass play of 20 yards or more, and that was a little slant they threw to Kelce. You know, he runs well after the catch, so he took it, I think it was 42 yards. So, you know, that's kind of been the extent of their big play passing game. I mean, that's been a problem. The Chiefs do need to get that part of their game going, and, you know, Kelce certainly figures prominently in it because he's pretty fast, and he has the ability to get downfield for a big guy.
The running back situation, they got great production when Jamaal Charles went down, from two guys that, if you didn't live in Kansas City, probably people hadn't been familiar with, in Spencer Ware and Charcander Quest. What's Charles' situation this week? Is he going to play?
Yeah, people in Kansas City weren't real familiar with Spencer Ware and Charcander West before Charles's injury. But you know, we'll know more about Charles as the week goes on. You know, I think he's got. I don't think there was ever a realistic chance the first 3 weeks of the season that he would play, but I think it's better now. You know, we'll see how the week goes. My sense is, right now, no, the Chiefs will wait one more week. They got the bye next week, and they'll bring him back after the bye. But, you know, that certainly could change.
Albert Wilson had kind of a breakout game 2 years ago against the Steelers in Heinz Field. He's a guy who you look at what the skill set of Wilson, the skill set of DeAnthony Thomas. These are guys here in the opening weeks of the season, the Steelers, in terms of guys who are running backs, but similar profiles, the more the scat back, the guys, the Sproles type guys, the Steelers have had Gio Bernard, Steelers have had trouble with these guys. How prominently have Wilson and Thomas been featured in the offense so far?
Well, Thomas hadn't been featured at all. He's been inactive for the first 3 games, although he's healthy. And Wilson has been really unproductive. I mean, he's caught 5 passes for, I think it's 12 yards. It's just, you know, he just doesn't look like a good fit right now for what they're doing. You know, he used to be a starter for the Chiefs, and he's lost his starting job now. Chris Conley starts for him instead. So Wilson's playing time has really gone down, and just hasn't been very productive. You know, the Chiefs, you know, one of their goals coming into this season was to get more from their receivers other than Jeremy Maclin and Travis Kelce. And you know, they have gotten that from Spencer Ware as a running back. And Chris Conley had a nice game in the opener against San Diego. But other than that, it's been kind of a struggle for the Chiefs to get the ball to really everybody. I mean, the passing game just has been really, I don't know if you want to call it ugly, it just hasn't worked the way they'd hoped, particularly the last 2 weeks. And everybody's being affected by that right now.
I think we've seen so far, as David hinted to, those backs getting the ball out of the backfield in the passing game in the first 3 games against the Steelers. And I know Ware and West enter this game with 10 catches each. And Andy Reid's not ignoring that tape, is he? You expect both these backs to get the ball early and often in the passing game out of the backfield?
I would think they'd, you know, give that a look for sure. But, you know, I got to believe that Steelers are also spending a lot of time working on that in practice. So, you know, I don't know how effective the Chiefs would be with that. But certainly I would think the Chiefs would give that a look, yeah.
When you flip over to the defensive side of football, obviously without Justin Houston, that's a big thing right now. And pretty much like the Steelers, the Chiefs defense seems to have a little bit of problems getting after the quarterback. I think they have 3 sacks, and I think one of those came late in the game against the Chargers as well, too. Where are their issues on their front 7 as far as getting to the quarterback? And, talk a little bit about the play of those outside linebackers, asked to replace Houston.
Yeah, the pass rush has been probably the Chiefs' biggest problem defensively so far. It just hadn't been very consistent. Yeah, I mean, the biggest problem is their best pass rusher's not there, and that's been an issue for them. And not only is Houston not playing, but Tom Mahaly's he's a part-time player now. He's 32. His knees are kind of limiting him. He doesn't practice much, and he's not a full-time player. At least he hasn't been the first 3 weeks. He played a little more against the Jets last week than he had been, but that in part was because the Chiefs got a pretty big lead and got the Jets into passing mode. So, we'll see how the Chiefs handle it this week, but it's been a problem for them to get pressure on the quarterback. I mean, it's just it's just not been a consistent thing for them. So that's one area that they do need to improve in.
Can this team be Marcus? Can this team be run on up the middle?
The Chargers did a real nice job of it in the first half or most of the first 3 quarters. And the Chiefs, changed some things up and got that fixed. And the Chiefs have actually done a pretty good job playing run defense since then. The stats weren't great last week against the Jets. The Jets averaged about 5 yards a carry. But, keep in mind the context of the game. The Chiefs were content to give the Jets 4 or 5 yards a carry. When they're behind, when the Jets are way behind like they were for most of that game. So, I think the Chiefs have done a decent job with their run defense. But yeah, I mean, against a determined opponent like the Chargers were for sure, it has been a problem for them.
I assume you look at this defense in the secondary, Eric Berry back, one of the great stories last year, Gaines on one side and Peters on the other. I know they've had trouble on the one corner opposite Peters, but a lot written and said here. I think since he entered the league last year, Peters leads the NFL with 12 interceptions for this year. But he's a guy who's just going to stay on one side, right? He's just going to play the left. So if the Steelers want to play Antonio Brown on the left side of their formation where he usually is, the Chiefs won't match that up. Is that correct?
Well, that's how the Chiefs have done it. I mean, Peters has been exclusively their left cornerback, so I don't know what their game plan is this week, but if they move Peters around, if they go send him to wherever Antonio Brown goes, that would be a departure from how they've done things up to this point, yeah.
And just in terms of defensive health, are they relatively healthy?
Yeah, I mean, Tom Mahaly is not practicing today because of some soreness in his knees, but he's a part-time practice player. So, there's that. Otherwise, they're in pretty good shape defensively. Not, again, Justin Houston's out, and that's a huge loss for them. But otherwise, they've been in pretty good shape on defense physically.
If you had to name one weakness on both sides of the football, what would it be heading into this week 4 game?
Well, defensively, it's their pass rush, like we talked about earlier. They just haven't been very consistent with that. So that's on defense. On offense, it's been pretty ugly with the passing game. They've got 1 touchdown in the last 2 games on offense. And, that's not going to get it done this week in Pittsburgh, and they know that. So, the passing game, the Chiefs, while they didn't get big plays, they certainly in the past have been able to go on those long drives, those 10, 12 play, 75 yard touchdown drives, you could always count on a couple of those a week from the Chiefs. You just haven't seen those. They haven't been consistent in putting those together. They caught fire at the right time against San Diego, but otherwise it's really been a struggle for them from week to week. And, you just don't know. Maybe this is who the Chiefs are. Maybe they're going to struggle all year. At some point, you know, a team is what it is, and maybe that's going to be an issue for the Chiefs. We'll have to see.
Adam, we're a long way from game time, and with the Steeler injuries, it's really unclear. It looks like they're going to be missing, you know, possibly as many as six starters in this game. The Chiefs have always played the Steelers tough, whether it be Heinz Field or at Arrowhead. It's a nationally televised game. Who comes out of here with the win?
Well, it's a tough one. You know, both teams, neither team has really been what you thought they would be up to this point. You know, the Chiefs haven't allowed a touchdown in seven quarters now, and you had the six picks and the eight turnovers against the Jets. You know, they were certainly able to shut down what had been a pretty high-scoring team in the Jets last week, but you know, it's different now. They're going on the road, and this is Ben Roethlisberger and not Ryan Fitzpatrick, so you know, the Steelers are going to score some points. They may not get to 30 or whatever, but they're going to score some points. So to me, the pressure's on the Chiefs offense to produce. And like I said, in one touchdown in the last 2 weeks, there's just a lot of problems right now with this offense. And they could bust out this week, but they got a lot to fix in 1 week. I mean, that's generally, you don't see that kind of go from what they have now to a big performance. So I'm picking the Steelers. I mean, the spread sounds about right to me, 6 points. You know, that sounds about right to me. I like the home team in this one.
Well, Adam, really, really appreciate your time and great insights. And as I mentioned, look forward to seeing you Sunday night. For our listeners, again, it's Adam Teicher, Teicher on Twitter, Adam Teicher. And you can go to KC Chiefs ESPN to check it out on Facebook. Thanks again.
Hey, anytime.
Okay, good stuff from Adam Teicher. And Dave, you know, you got two teams where, you know, there are high expectations for both teams, and it doesn't sound like he's very high on what he's seen from the Chiefs here to start the season. And certainly, based on what the Steeler fans saw against the Eagles, they're a little despondent as well. Somebody's actually going to win this game, right?
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask him, who's this the bigger test for, the Chiefs or the Steelers? But limited on time there. Real quick, did not practice for the Steelers today. Sean Davis, Ramon Foster, Robert Golden, Cinquez Golson, Eli Rogers, Ryan Shazier, Cody Wallace, and Roosevelt Nix was limited there.
My guess is none of those seven guys will play in the game. And so, you know, I don't know if that will just then be the inactive list, but, you know, you may see a roster move or two. The other thing to point out is a little bit of a surprise to me, and I don't know if it is to you, Dave. Jordan Dangerfield ran with the ones at safety next to Mike Mitchell, not Shamarco Thomas.
Yeah, quite interesting for sure. It shows you how far Shamarco has slid down the depth chart there, and I guess us talking about Shamarco maybe seeing time on defense was all a waste of my hot air, huh?
Yeah, maybe a little premature for both of us, but Mike suggested he might, so we'll see what happens. Hey, Steelers Nation, remember, mortgage rates are currently near or at all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage. A lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native, Craig is a nationally recognized lender that would love the opportunity to help out Terrible Podcast listeners. Call Craig Oxane today at 866-772-0471. That's 866-772-0471, or apply online at blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. All right. So we're going to be back Friday. We'll get more into the Chiefs. We'll have our picks for the week. We got all sorts of stuff going on.
I'm going to put David on a hot tea diet as well, too, to get that voice in.
Can you believe I'm drinking hot water as we speak?
There you go. David, have a great show today. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, go to SteelersDepot.com. Donate button's upper right-hand corner there. David, get well. Talk to you on Friday.
As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.